Hello, everyone. You're listening to America Meditating Radio. We collect wisdom, inspire each other, and empower hearts on demand 24/7. I'm Sister Jenna, host of the syndicated America Meditating Radio. Join us as we talk one-on-one with leading experts who answer life's most compelling questions, because in a world of uncertainty, we need answers right here, right now. America Meditating Radio, a show for everyone to learn more about this amazing thing called life.
When I was a boy, my maternal grandfather and I would go for walks along the Little White River on our northern part of the reservation. We walked along the river, over the hills, across the meadows, the prairies, wherever. And this occurred over a few years, in any season of the year. He just liked to walk. He liked the physical activity to walk, and he liked to look at the land. He liked to point things out to me. And I paid attention. But there was something that he did. We would stop every now and then. And he did this frequently. We would stop and he would grab me by the shoulders and he would turn me around and he would make me look at the trail the way we had come to this point. And he would say, "Remember that trail. Remember the way we came." And I dutifully said, "Yes, Grandpa." He did this a lot. Finally, when I was 7, the year before I went away to school, I worked up the nerve to ask him, "Well, Grandpa, why are you saying this? Why are you making me look back?" And his answer was simple enough, and it fell into place for me years later. He said, "One of these times I'm going to send you back down these trails by yourself. And if you don't remember the way, you will be lost." To me, that is a statement about our past. That big quantifiable past that is there, that is larger than anything in our lives. If we don't know how we got to the point that we are as individuals and as a society, but especially as individuals, then we're lost. Because we don't know where we came from. Not the flamboyant warrior with the feathers in his hair and the lance in his hand, which is an iconic image that everybody has of Native people. No, that's not what we were about. That's only part of what we were. Only a small part of what we were as people. The other part is compassion and having a purpose and taking care of each other. Those were the most important things. So that's why ancestry is important to me. That's why ancestry should be important to everybody. No matter who we are, whether we're Native or not, no matter what our culture is, no matter what our society is, no matter what our standing in the community is, I don't care what we do for a living, ancestry is important. You have to know the trail that you came down to be at the point that you are as an individual. You have to look back at that trail, the road that you have walked with your ancestors, their values, kind of people they were, the kind of mistakes they made, the kind of accomplishments they had. They're all a part of me. All of that is part of who I am.
Welcome to America Meditating Radio. That was Joseph Marshall helping us to remember who we are and the path that we must take. Isn't that incredible? We are all traveling on the path. We're all traveling on the journey. We all have to remember where we've come from as an energy and how to bring that energy forward into our physical lives more. I've been thinking a lot about how our days of innocence have become almost slightly suppressed due to all the other life experiences that we've endured, whether it's been trauma, sorrow, the sense of loss. Now, we only feel trauma, sorrow, sense of loss when we start to feel like the original innocence and the original purity has become violated, and we begin to focus more on the violation than the remembrance of the original self. That gets put in the background. And so here we are, a generation, many, many generations later, of souls carrying on, walking the journey, walking the path, and don't remember the original vibration that we were birthed with. So we struggle, and the story becomes intricate, and we get all the drama that we're getting nowadays in our wonderful America and for the rest of the world, just a lot of drama. You know, we have just adapted our way of thinking and speaking and choosing and being to a very normal or average vibration. I want to be respectful to all of us in the room. You know, I use an acronym all the time called ALGY. A for anger, L for lust, G for greed, A for attachment, and E for ego. If my consciousness and thinking has the mixture or the amplification of this mode of intention, then there are going to be obstacles, there's going to be competition, jealousy, have and have not, wants, lack, you know, all the energies that we're seeing that's 99.9% in the world today. That means we've moved so far away from the true innocence of the soul, from the true sacredness of the soul. And why it's such a dramatic time is because the age after this will be the age of truth, the age of divinity, the age of sacredness, the age of beauty. So I guess it just has to be really intense for us to really begin to do our work and for us to be able to say that's enough of that. So when everything starts to get dismantled, relationships, health, politics, religion, science, economy, whatever it might be, that seems to be moving away from us, it's actually helping us to return to a sacred part of our beings and to a sacred part of ourselves. I hope that made sense. Hold the line. Don't change that dial, because we're going to be having a heart-to-heart with Lama Sultrim Alion, and we're going to be talking about the return of the sacred feminine. And before I get the Lama on, let's do what we do best here. Hold a moment of reflection. Sending our loving vibrations and thoughts to our brothers and sisters throughout the whole planet. There's something happening here. And a lot of us are feeling the anxiety or the confidence. Either you're going to feel anxiety or the confidence that I'm going to contribute to the age of truth, and I'm not going to live into the anxiety of the age of deception. Here's the power to let go. From Off to Work by Sister Jenna. Take a deep breath. Taking this moment, I, the soul, settle gently inside, behind my eyes. As I continue this journey in time, I am not the body. I am not my attachments. And I am not my material world around me. But as I settle further within the soul, I am powerful. With the power to let go, I am able to release the negative thoughts and memories that I find myself still holding on to. I recognize that the past is the past, and to bring any of it into the present is to limit my fortune for the future.
Instead, I, the soul, remain positive, light, and true. I'm free from burdens or worries, trusting that with the power to let go, new experiences and beautiful experiences are attracted to me. I am greatly fortunate.
That was the power to let go from off to work. On an old album I did a few years ago, but you can also get a copy of it from iTunes, Amazon, and CD Baby. You're tuning to America Meditating Radio. I'm your host, Sister Jenna. Today we have the wonderful privilege to talk to Lama Siltram Alayon. He's the founder and the resident Lama of Taro Mandala, a 700-acre Buddhist retreat located outside of Boulder, Colorado. She traveled to India in her late teens, and at the age of 22, she was ordained as the first Western Buddhist nun. Yehey! So after living in the Himalayan region for several years, she returned her monastic vows, married and raised a family of three children while continuing to study and practice Buddhism. Love that. Now, 50 years later, she finds herself teaching women tools of empowerment through their sacred feminine lineage. Lama Siltram was named Buddhist Woman of the Year in 2009 by a panel of distinguished scholars and practitioners in Bangkok, Thailand. She's author of Woman of Wisdom, Feeding Your Demons, and her new book, Wisdom Rising, Journey into the Mandala of the Empowered Feminine. Today, we're honored to welcome Lama Siltram Alayon to America Meditating. I am so inspired by you.
Thank you.
You know, one of the most intriguing things is to be on a spiritual journey and to have the honest courage to say, I got it. I don't think just being in a monastic, you know, kind of a setting where I'm away from the world will actually give me my enlightenment fully. No, I'm not knocking anyone who does it. I'm just saying that it takes a lot of courage and a lot of honesty when we say, I can still be my own Buddhist monk. I live as a nun or as a monk in my heart. And wherever I go, I take my monastery with me. So could we talk about what was it like when you actually took that leap of faith to move towards a more, I don't want to say more, but to move towards now the life of marriage and kids and raising a family and still carrying your monastery in your heart, which I'm sure you did.
Yeah, well, this was a long time ago now. I have six grandchildren.
No.
But, yeah, I was a nun in the early 70s, and I began to feel that it wasn't necessarily going to be the best path for me permanently. Mm-hmm. And I also started having dreams about babies, a particular baby that was appearing on my right shoulder in these dreams. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really a baby, maybe like 1 or 2 years old. And so I went to my teacher, my Tibetan teacher, Apa Rinpoche, and I said, Rinpoche, I'm dreaming about babies and I'm a nun. And he started laughing, and he couldn't stop laughing. He laughed so hard he started drooling. And I was like, this is not funny. This is a big decision and I should not be having these dreams. And then he said, all nuns should have babies. And I was thinking, why, you know, why would,
wow,
why? And he said, well, you know, of the 25 disciples of Guru Rinpoche, who is the first teacher who brought Buddhism to Tibet, there were very few monastics. And all of those disciples who spread Buddhism in Tibet and practice deeply and so on were lay people. And when you become a lay person, you will have greater compassion. And so for me, it was a choice that really came out of that discussion. And I do think that this baby was there waiting, because sometimes I say I get pregnant 5 minutes after I disrobed. It wasn't quite that fast, but it was pretty quick.
That was not wasting time.
And then I had another child 17 months later, and then eventually I had twins. So I think what I saw in disrobing was really what I hadn't attained as a nun. I could see my impatience, my anger, all kinds of things that, because I lived as a nun and I didn't have any pressures on me and I was always getting enough sleep and so on, I thought that there were certain things that I had overcome. And then when I had a baby, I realized I hadn't. So it was very humbling, and also brought me into a greater understanding of regular people and their lives and what they go through. And I think I figured out one time I hadn't had a full night's sleep for 7 years raising my children. And sleep deprivation is it's a really intense thing.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, in terms of continuing my path, there was that aspect, of course, of just sort of the reality check of what I had actually realized and what was really just my circumstances. And then I kept practicing. I always practiced. And I would do small retreats. I would, when they got older, I would take a weekend, or when they were quite a bit older, I'd go a little longer, you know, maybe a week or so. But I wasn't able to go into full solitary retreat for a year until they were grown up. But I always had the thread of my practice going through my life.
I bet. I mean, do you ever miss being in the monastery and wearing the robe?
I wouldn't say I do now, but I did for a long time, and I had a lot of dreams about that, and also dreams of not knowing what to wear, not knowing, you know, if I should be wearing my robes or lay clothes. There was a whole much longer process than the actual disrobing that's done internally, but I really... I'm happy with my choice, and so I don't have any regrets. I guess, you know, that I sometimes wonder, like, what would it have been like? What would my life have been had I stayed as a monastic?
It would have been gorgeous, and it just like how it's gorgeous with you being a grandmother now, six beautiful little angels that you are in service to. I want to talk about the rise of the Me Too movement and Women's March throughout the world. I mean, how are you looking at women's equality today in the U.S. and elsewhere? And what are women seeking more than anything in this age?
I was really moved by the Women's March with 5 million women on 7 continents. And what struck me was the combination of fierceness and humor and non-aggression. And that's what's striking me, is that women are beginning to own this model or this archetype of fierceness that they have been forbidden. And they're saying no, or they're saying yes, and not being victims. And so what I see happening is this kind of, it's really a beautiful wave that's happening right now, and it's hard to know why exactly we came to this moment. I think it's partly because there's enough women in power, in places of power, a certain percentage. I think they say it needs to be 20% before something like Me Too can happen in, say, Hollywood. And gives women courage to speak out and to say their truth. So what my new book is about and what I'm observing is that there's this movement, this wave, this impetus, and there needs to be an empowering process, I-N-powering, that goes with it so that the women and the men who are supporting them have something to draw on, have strength to draw on as they move out, and whether it's politically or within the family or within the work or wherever they find themselves, to have an inner resource, which I think is something that you're giving people as well, from what I can tell about your work, from which to operate so that we don't get fragmented, drained, and burned out in the process. And so that's what I see, is that it's a worldwide wave. Mm-hmm. And being as old as I am, I remember the last big wave in the early 70s of feminism. And it's new now, it's fresh, and it's not a bad word anymore. For many years, being a feminist was a bad word, and now people are owning it, including men like Barack Obama and Justin Trudeau both said they're feminists.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think what I'm looking for and toward is fierceness with compassion.
Love that. Your book, I want to talk a little bit about your new book, Wisdom Rising. And just before we even get into that, I've gotten into trouble with speaking about my feminism or my interpretation of it. And please know that I respect everyone. I found myself that I'm willing and open to offer the old traditional way of being a woman, given the babies, stay healthy, stay good, fulfill my husband's needs, make sure I'm a social butterfly, as long as he treats me like a queen, respects me, brings home the funding to make sure I live the kind of life that I want to. If for whatever reason he's not able to offer that, then it's done. Then I stand up and then I have a bigger voice to say, we can't do that. This is what I need. This is how we should do this. Because I think when a woman gives of her body changes when she has a child. Her whole life goes on hold when she has to do all of these things. And if, to me, the male partnership doesn't seem to honor and even understand the incredible amount of sacrifice a woman makes when she goes down that journey, and then he starts to disrespect us, then he starts to think we shouldn't get enough pay, then he thinks that we should only be, I just like, done. No, we don't need to have that. And I wonder if sometimes when I look at the role of women and men today, that I wonder if the women have gotten a bad part of the deal, you know, of woman, quote, empowerment. You know, they have the kids, they're still cooking, they're still cleaning the house, they're still going to work, they're paying a part of the bills. And, you know, the husband might not necessarily always be the nicest guy, and he does his little bit, but he does much less than a woman. Then I wonder, what is this? This isn't right. I don't think we should do everything, despite the fact that, you know, now we have women empowerment and we're, you know, moving toward a feminist movement, or, you know, we're the ones. And so, as you can imagine, that I've gotten into trouble speaking about that. But I think what gets missed is that I honor what our role is as a woman. And if I'm not respected, if I'm not given the same equal regard and economic backing, then I don't want to hear you as my husband. You need to hear me. You need to hear me. Because I think we come with so much more of stuff that we are bringing to the planet. And I'm not putting down my male gender, but there has to be a change in even the way a woman considers her role personally, which I think is really deep inner work. I just had to put that in, and I'm telling you, I get into a lot of trouble when I do that. So, I want to talk about your book, Wisdom Rising, and and you know, did what I say anything to you? And did it? Is it something that you have also highlighted in your new book? And by the way, congratulations on your book.
No, thank you. Well, one of the points that I make right in the beginning of the book is how women and nature have been treated the same over history, in the sense that when nature has been abused and disregarded, so have women. And when it hasn't, when it's been respected and honored, so have women. And so if you look historically and at different cultures at what's happening ecologically and what's happening with women, then you'll see this parallel path. And the reason for that is that there has been historically a split between nature and spirit, or matter and spirit, in patriarchal religions. And so those religions or spiritual paths have had as the goal to get up and out of this mess into something transcendent, pure, luminous, spiritual. And when there has been a strong presence of the feminine in spiritual realm and in a culture, spirituality is seen to be in matter. In fact, the word matter in Latin is mater, which goes back to mother. And so this is something really that isn't pointed out very much, but I think it's really important, because if we have a spirituality that's aimed at transcendence rather than immanence, then we'll always have this split between spirit and matter, and women and nature have always been associated and therefore have been considered to be not spiritual or less than the male representative of that religion. And so what I'm noting is what this has led us to as a society in terms of our ecological situation and also the abuse of women. And so in my book, I talk about that, and then how can we move into a kind of spiritual practice and awareness where we are in our lives, in our bodies, is spiritual, that the spiritual isn't conceived of as something external and transcendent. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that answers your question exactly, but this has really led us to the situation we're in with global warming and so on, is the lack of respect for and honoring of nature, and then we find the parallel situation with women.
Mm-hmm. You know, what I'm pulling is that the sacred feminine is a balanced energy. It's not even just being a woman. It is about a particular quality and virtue that you bring into your manifested life, right? And so even some men that I know have very, very nurturing, very soft, very gentle qualities that are even sometimes more sustaining and more nurturing than even some women that I know that have now gone into a very, very masculine mental state of existence. There's some women who don't even know how to cook anymore, don't even know how to take care of a house, you know, but they're in a female body. So when we're empowering a woman just because she's in the gender of a woman, how do we even bring back her sacred feminine side, you know, that God-given pure energy that sustains?
Mm-hmm.
That sustains. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, well, I have a couple of things to say to that. One is that when we conceptualize the feminine, like you just did, you know, with certain, you know, it's to take care of the house or it's nurturing and so on. Yes, that is an aspect of the feminine, but the feminine has many, many aspects, and most of them have not been allowed under patriarchy. They're scary, and the fierce feminine is one of those. And so the fierce, the powerful, the independent, you know, so many aspects that is that are actually part of us haven't been allowed. And so we've been sort of put into a sort of two-dimensional, like this is what a woman is, and these are feminine qualities. And so I think we don't really even know what the full potency of the feminine is, because we've seen it only within that context. And women are different, and I think that difference needs to be discovered and cultivated, because we need her in the world. And that difference is compassion, is understanding interconnectedness and relationship, a lot to do with our biological situation as mothers and needing to be in relationship and so on. But there's also other aspects of the feminine, like the fierce or the powerful or the sexual or all kinds of things that we don't even know what they would be like if they weren't being defined by and operating within a patriarchal system, if that makes sense to you. Does that
it does.
Make sense?
It does. Yeah, it does. I hear what you're saying. Have you ever explored the Indian deities, the Shiv Shaktis, which were, they're now mythological stories or characters, but they really existed in India way back before the fall of their kingdom and their existence. And they were in female bodies, and they embodied a lot of divine power.
That's
and they
right.
Governed.
Like, and I mean, there was Parvati, the nurturing.
Right.
There was also Durga and Kali.
Right. And Lakshmi and Radhe. And so I believe that there was an example, and I believe it's etched in all of our it's etched in our souls. We're just trying to find the route back to the remembrance of that vibration to bring it back to the surface. So even if I see a woman going too far off to the masculine, or I see a man going too far off to the feminine, I look at it more like we're just looking for our balance, because there is a call for an image of authority. But the authority shouldn't be initiating fear or a lack. The authority is an authority that initiates inspiration, self-worth, dignity, a rise of consciousness. So for me, I feel that from the book, is that your sacred feminine idea of return is where your presence really just inspires people to become their best.
Yeah, and another thing that's interesting about gender is that as a Vajrayana practitioner of Tibetan Buddhism, we work with deities like what you were speaking of in the Hindu tradition. We call them yidams, and there's male and female yidams, and then there's also the yidams in union. And so as a practitioner, let's say I'm a woman practitioner of Tibetan Buddhism, I will, during my lifetime, identify and practice a sadhana of the masculine, of the feminine, and of the union. So I will imagine myself as being male, and I will do a whole sadhana practice as, say, Chenrezig, the male deity of compassion, and really body as male. And
neat.
So, and then as female, and a male practitioner would do the same. And so there's a kind of beautiful gender fluidity in Vajrayana, where you actually have the experience of cultivating the qualities or the energy of the opposite gender, and let that part of your psyche develop so that we become more whole and also less identified with whatever gender we're born in, like that we can't find ourselves in the other. So that's really part of our practice.
I like that. I like that very much, and I think it speaks volumes. You're coming to Washington, D.C. in June. Can you tell our listeners about your visit and where they can find you? How can they sign up about your retreats and things that you're doing?
Yes. I'll be speaking three places in Washington. I think I'll be with you, right, one time?
I hope so.
And I'll get the dates and the places. My assistants here, I don't have it right on the top of my head.
Okay. Do you have a website that you can leave our listeners with?
I'll give it to you, the dates and places in Washington.
How about a website that you can leave our listeners with?
Sure. Tara Mandala, TaraMandala
dot org or dot com?
Org.
Yes,
yeah.
Wonderful. So that's TaraMandala.org, everyone, to find out more about Lama Sultram Alion, who is known for she's broken through so many glass ceilings, from being the first Western Buddhist nun to actually expanding her life into becoming a mom, becoming a grandmother, continues to write her books. And so I hope you've enjoyed our conversation with her today, and just a wonderful energy, and looking forward to keeping up date with you. I want to keep up with you. I love the spirit and the energy that you're bringing on the air with me today. It's just genuine.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the dates in Washington are June 18th and 20th.
Mm,
and
okay, great.
We have also my Lama Sultram Alione Facebook page, my public figure page, will have all the details. And here they are. I'll just give them before we end our connection here. June 18th, 7:30 p.m., guest teaching at the weekly meditation class with Jonathan Faust in Arlington, Virginia.
Wonderful.
And then I'll teach at Tara Brock's class on June 20th, 7:30 p.m., at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Bethesda, Maryland.
Okay, beautiful, beautiful. So you'll be in our area, and we'll definitely share the word, of course. Listen, thank you so much for your beautiful kindness and beauty of spirit. And enjoy being an amazing grandmother, and I'm sure you were an amazing mother, but also just a contribution to our planet. So thank you.
Thank you. It's lovely to meet you and to connect with your audience.
You're lovely. All the best. Take care.
Okay. Bye for now.
Bye. I love stories like this, you know, individuals that really just move up and move on, and life is a journey. But one of the things that also touched me was, you know, sometimes the struggle of what to wear after you put down the robe. I just thought that was so cute. Well, there is so much more richness in our conversation as well. The importance of us raising our wisdom to ourselves. And so if you really want to learn more, Women of Wisdom, Feeding Your Demons, the wonderful Lama Sultran's new book, who was also Buddhist Woman of the Year in 2009. Remember, everyone, no one can take away your happiness unless you give them permission. We are here. We are here to love each other the same. Let's do that. Let's make that happen, and let's dance away all the gunk of stuff that might be trying to pull us down to a lower frequency. Here is Bliss from an old album called Letting Go. Here is Dance Away.